Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. Had to test the lungs and the vocal cords to see how long we could carry it. Could have done it longer, but it's all good. Awesome show for you today. Got my man Elijah Campbell here. It's going to be all Elijah and myself, man. It's an ET edition
of the show.
And we're going to dive into some of the topics. Obviously, we have to discuss Vic Beasley. My Lord, we have to discuss that. So we'll get into that. We're going to talk about some of the things that really are cause for alarm on offense and defense. It can't always all be positive. So we're going to get into that and a few other things. Have to get into the special teams. Plenty of quotes today for you. Going to pull some of the conversations that the coaches and players have had over the last week. Shout out to the Titans PR team too, man. I know it has to be tough, and they are doing a great job of just making sure that we're getting to talk to the players, to the coaches. It's been a great experience so far, and it's just one of those things, man. You have to reinvent yourself and figure out new ways that you're going to gather content. And folks, it's going to be tough. I ask that you bear with us, but we're going to keep bringing, you know, everything we can. Each one of us in this Nashville media, you know, we all have different perspectives, different angles that we like to approach, but we're all kind of picking from the same tree this go round. So again, bear with us. We're going to do the best we can. I guarantee you that I personally, and Elijah, you know, on this show, will deliver top-level content. I'm not going to sit here and say the best, you know, because I look at things like Ferrari and Bentley and Aston Martin. They don't say they're the best. It's just something that just goes without saying. So I'm not going to sit here and, yeah, call us the best podcast or call us this or that. I'm gonna say you'll get the best podcast that Elijah and I are able to do. I'm going to say that you'll get the best digital content that I'm able to do, and I guarantee you, you'll be happy with it. So, that being said, let's get into it, man. The camp schedule, I think that's something that we probably need to roll out. I have been notified that I'll be in the Tier 2M, right? So, I'm going to have to get tested, right? I have to do the corona thing.
You're going to get the swab.
And unfortunately, it's not the one where they touch the back of your skull, you know? Oh. I told myself if that was going to be the thing that they're going to do, I'm not going to go in Tier 2M. I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. I was going to go into the other tier. But, yeah, Monday is the first day of testing, and then you have a couple days off, and then you have to submit a couple more, you know. So we're off Tuesday, Wednesday, then Thursday and Friday. You go back for testing. You have to submit 3 negative tests before you're able to go into the building. And that's kind of the process. I thought it was really interesting how they are working to get things going. You saw what they, in their release, starting, was it August 14th? Mm-hmm. They're going to have 14 consecutive, well, not consecutive, a total of 14 padded practices. And that's going to be a good opportunity for these guys to really get back into the swing of things. We will be there, I believe it's August 12th, Titans reported. Like, we'll be in the build, provided that everything's okay as far as testing, et cetera, is concerned. Now, Tier 3 doesn't have to get tested, but you do have to go through that questionnaire. And I don't know if each of you, you know, whether it's going into DMV or going to, you know, any type of facility where there's a lot of people, they go through those questions, you know. Do you have a temperature of, or have you been feeling sick? Have you been around anybody that has, et cetera, et cetera? So you're going to have to go through that. They do the laser testing, laser thermometer. And that's something that anybody's going to have to go through if they want to go into the building as far as media is concerned. And once that happens, we will be on the field and see them. As I said, I believe it's August 12th. It's going to be the first time we'll be able to see this 2020 group together. Now, whether or not that has Vic Beasley as part of it is a different conversation. We'll get into later. But I just wanted to run through that period. And here's the thing. They're going to have a ramp-up period, right? And, you know, every year you have that ramp-up period. Even under seasons, you know, training camps where it's normal circumstance, right? Not this craziness that we're experiencing now. You always have a ramp-up period before you get going to that live action, to that thud period and those type of things that they do during practice with pads on. Ryan Tannehill is a guy who, you know, had the injury. I believe it was, I want to say 2016. He had the knee injury, and the Dolphins went out and signed Jay Cutler because Tannehill had that before the season started, you know, early in camp, I believe it was, and they had to get somebody, and that's what they did. Ryan Tannehill also has a background. You know, he was a biology major, and at one point he wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. That's something he wanted to get into that after football. I had to ask him, you know, knowing his background, knowing he's a guy that went through it, right, a non-contact injury in camp, I had to ask him what this ramp-up period means to him. So here's what he had to say last week when we spoke to him.
It's huge. You know, I'm really excited that and happy that we got this worked out where we could have the extended ramp-up period. Just the fact of playing football is different. You know, you can train, you can lift weights, you can run, but, you know, talk to any guy, you know, football shape is different. So just being able to work our way back into it a little bit, a little more slowly than a traditional training camp, I feel like is huge and is really going to help a lot of guys stay healthy, you know, throughout the season.
That's a question, right? Football shape and regular shape, because I was on Jared and the GM a couple weeks ago, and my guy Jared, he asked me what I thought of the ramp-up period, and he seemed like he was surprised when I said I felt it was necessary. And for Jared, you know, his thing was, okay, if these guys worked hard during the offseason and got themselves together, why do they need the ramp-up period? Tannehill just told you. Football shape is a different creature. And I could tell you from someone who worked really hard in the offseason to get ready for camp at a college level, and they get in there on those two-a-days, I still wasn't ready.
It's hard.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard. It's just a different shape that you have to be in to play football. And I mean, the same could be said for basketball. I'm not going to say it could be said for baseball. You know, unless you get an inside-the-park home run. You know what I mean? Those type of things.
Limited spurts, yeah.
Yeah, in spurts. So you have to train for having spurts of speed, and you can't really – you know, duplicate that, and with home plate to first, second, and third. You know, you can't duplicate that.
And then with football, throw in the variable of physicality. So like that's a whole other variable that it's like really hard to practice by yourself if you're quarantining at your home by yourself. What are you going to ever do? You have your kids hit you while you run? Like, I mean, that's a really hard thing to replicate in the off season. So you do have to have that. It's a total different kind of shape, like Ryan said, you have to be in.
Right, he hit the nail on the head. So I wanted to get into that a little bit just to lead into the show, to let you know what we're looking at over the next week or so. It's going to be interesting, and I tell you honestly, I absolutely can't wait to get on the field and watch these guys, man. I've been dying to do that. So I can't wait, and I know you guys and girls can't wait. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back, and we're going to get into some question marks on offense and defense. But before we do, you know what you have to do, right? Check us out. iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Search Talking, WITH, Talking with TD. Let's get those subscriptions. Let's get that 5-star rating. Let's get those reviews, and we'll be right back to you.
This is Corey Davis, and you're talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. Wanted to bring you back into my man OTS Solo. He's a Titans fan, by the way, folks. So we have a couple tracks for him that he's doing. Make sure you check him out on YouTube. I believe he's on Spotify as well. OTS Solo. Got a few songs for you to check out, man.
Local flavor in there.
That's
I see
right.
You mixing it up a little bit.
The local flavor. And he has three really mellow tracks, and we'll give you a little taste test, a little sample of them on today's show. But as we said before the break, I wanted to get into the biggest question marks on offense and defense. And I guess it'll probably be best. We'll start with offense. I know I have my question marks. Elijah, I know you have yours. So why don't you go ahead and let the listeners know what you feel is the biggest question mark.
On offense, to me, it's going to be replacing Jack Conklin.
Mm.
And what have we talked about the last couple weeks? Derrick Henry getting his extension. You got him long term. And part of the reason that Derrick Henry made the jump from being a pretty good running back to arguably the best in the league was because that offensive line, and I want to steal the Roger Saffold quote from after the Patriots wildcard victory, where they are movers of men. They're like bouncers.
Yeah.
That offensive line unit is one of the best movers of grown men on the planet. And losing Jack Conklin's going to hurt. Now, bringing the band back's nice, and Dennis Kelly's going to get rewarded for a lot of the great work that he put in on being part of that unit. But Jack Conklin was eighth in pass rush, not win rate, but block rate.
Mm.
Eighth in the entire league. Taylor Lewan was 10th. So they had two guys in the top 10 in terms of keeping Ryan Tannehill on his feet and making him be able to, A, do his thing, and B, create holes for Derrick Henry. And Football Outsiders had the Titans rushing unit, running backs, and offensive line. They kind of keep them in tandem as a top three in the league. Well, you lose, you know, a bookend tackle like that, there's going to be a question mark on how you fill it.
Yeah.
Dennis Kelly's a really good offensive lineman, but this is the biggest challenge of his career, and this is going to be the biggest test. The Titans, as we've discovered, are a pretty good running team. That was the thing they did best last year, and that's what they banked on to win some of those big games against the Patriots and the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept them in it against Kansas City. So for me, the biggest question mark, and there's a couple others you could point to on the offense as well, but to me the biggest one is if you're going to at least replicate what you do well, it's having to replace the one piece on the offensive line that helped make you dominant in the first place.
I like that. And, you know, here's the thing. Jack Conklin, his bread and butter is run blocking. Like, he's decent in pass pro, but he is a run blocking offensive lineman. And it's crazy because when you look at him, like, he's not a big hulking guy, but he's someone just knows how to use leverage, knows how to get out in space, and knows how to get his hands on someone and move them to where they want to be. Mm-hmm. And it's funny you mentioned Roger Saffold's quote, because I asked him that question after the game, and he and Lewan,
that's the best
one, kind of paired up. And I said, they said they're like bouncers in the club. I said, oh, no Timberlands, huh? He's like, no white T-shirts, no V-necks. So we had a good laugh about that.
Strict dress code.
Strict dress code. That's right.
Going in.
That's right.
They enforced it, too.
And, yeah, they did enforce it, and they really hit stride. Going into that game with what Derrick Henry and that unit, the offensive line, did against the Texans. And then now, you know, you saw it carry over. So I get it. I see what you're saying. And that continuity on the offensive line, when you have guys who have played a season together coming back together, because, you know, that position that's taken away, that right tackle, Jack Conklin – did a lot to help Nate Davis, who has become a pretty solid guard. So now you take that away and you have Dennis Kelly, who I think is good. Now, Dennis Kelly is also an athlete. He's a bigger, more of like a mauler type of guy. I want to see how that works, you know, in the running game. I want to see, you know, that whole unit be in sync. Because if you watch all 22, like especially the end zone copy, and you just see how everything – falls into place, the flow, and then Derrick Henry following the flow and then stretching it and then foot in the ground, cutting back. It's like when you watch the Olympics in the wintertime, you see that synchronized swimming. That's what it looks like. That doesn't come just naturally.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get to that point. So that's an excellent point that you brought up there. One other good thing is you have Isaiah Wilson, who was, you know, removed from the COVID reserve list. He signed his deal. He's in the building. He's ready to go. Did a show with Bustin' with the Boys, you know, with Taylor Lewan and Mike Compton. Will Compton, excuse me. So that's going to be good. I definitely see where you're going there. Now, for me, the guy who led us into this is the one that I have the question mark about. I want to see my biggest question on offense, because you have to find balance. A.J. Brown is going to be faced with the top corners in the league. My big question is, how much can Corey Davis continue to evolve, and how can he contribute as the 1A slash number 2 receiver on this team? You look at what Davis, and I think when you go back to 2018 and what he did, I'm bringing up the numbers here, 65 receptions, 891 yards, 4 touchdowns. You know, before Derrick Henry had that crazy December, it was Corey Davis who was trending towards a 1,000-yard season, which would have been a plateau at that time because, you know, no receiver had done it. I think it was, what, since Nate Washington? Or, no, Kendall Wright, I think it was. So
it might have been.
It had been a while. Yeah. It had been a while. So, for me, I want to see, okay, can they get that guy who dominated Stephon Gilmore? Can they get that guy who murdered the Eagles, caught the game-winning touchdown? Can they get him on a consistent basis? That's my biggest question. And the thing that I love, they did not pick up his fifth-year option. I can't wait till we get to talk to him, because I want to ask him, like, what type of – because a lot of guys – I mean, you're a competitor. That's basically you got rejected. You know what I mean? I want to see how he responds to that. Yeah. That's really the thing.
Yeah, and this really is the biggest adversity of his career now that he's been in the NFL. I mean, the Titans are basically telling him, like, this is it, because they know what he can do. I mean, there's not – I mean, how many receivers can you list right now off the top of your head that burn Stephon Gilmore for 9 catches over 100 yards and touchdowns?
Not many.
I mean, he's the best corner in the league. I mean, you could have made a case that he was a dark horse MVP candidate, and you could make him a dark horse MVP, you know, prediction this year.
People made that case.
Exactly. Yeah, I was making that case. Mm-hmm. That's how highly I think Stephon Gilmore, the level that he plays at all times. And Corey Davis really had his best game against the best in the league.
Yeah.
So what's frustrating for the Titans is knowing that he's got it. It's not a matter of if he has it or not. It's him being able to put a season together where he's A, healthy, and B, being able to fit in a role kind of under A.J. Brown, because you're not asking him to be the number one receiver anymore. Mm-hmm. Because A.J. Brown's going to get the, I guess, every team's best target. Their corner is going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to get the Stephon Gilmores now, the Marshawn Lattimores.
The Jair Alexander.
The Jair Alexander.
I love this game.
Yeah, throw him in there.
Trey White, too, you know, if he doesn't opt out.
Yeah, exactly. And he's going to be getting those. So right now, I mean, you're going to have some favorable matchups athletically on the outside with Corey Davis. So it's going to be – that's probably the most interesting player to watch for on this Titans team, given his situation and the talent that he is naturally gifted with.
Yeah, so I mean, that's where my question is. Now, you asked the question, so I want to provide what I feel could be an answer. And I think there is a difference – as far as Corey Davis and Marcus Mariota and Corey Davis and Ryan Tannehill. So for me, like, when I look at how they could start to find more ways to get Corey Davis the football, it goes back to a few times this year, or this past year, when Tannehill said that he saw Davis and he missed him. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have a quarterback and offensive coordinator who are on the same page and they're trying to find ways that they can, you know, evolve as an offense, especially from a continuity standpoint, because I asked Ryan Tannehill, I asked Arthur Smith, both, like, you look at all the top offenses, like the top quarterbacks, there's an OC and a quarterback, they're tagged together. Top OCs, you know, he's tagged with a quarterback, Sean Payton, Drew Brees, right? It's Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, Patrick Mahomes, you know what I mean? Greg Roman, Lamar Jackson. Okay, so where is Ryan Tannehill and Arthur Smith? And I asked Coach Smith about that relationship, and I think this relationship that they have has a lot of bearing on how good Corey Davis could be. Here's what Coach Smith had to say when I asked him about the QB and OC relationship?
You know, there's a lot of time that he and I spend, and I do think offensively it's the most important relationship you can have, because the players are the one out there executing, and the quarterback, and you know, we put in certain plays that you put in your system or whatever you're trying to accomplish, and they're the ones that bring it to life, and he and I need to be on the same page, and that's just the way I believe. I mean, it certainly, we go back and forth through ideas and the way we may tweak something, and Ryan's got a great football mind, and that relationship, you're right, it's hopefully we can build on that and be have some continuity from last year. But it's definitely important, that relationship between the play caller and the quarterback, because he's got to see it, what your intent is on the play, and then obviously he's the one that brings it to life. And then for me, understanding that he knows, and we've talked about it, and he may have an idea, and he wants to just, as we go back and forth, those are great conversations, and we ultimately know Sunday exactly what the intent is when every play is called and we're on the same page.
So that was Arthur Smith just speaking the truth. They want to be on the same page. And if you ask Arthur Smith, he will tell you that he wants to get Corey Davis the ball. Corey Davis is an explosive player when he gets. I mean, he averaged 14 yards per catch last year. So there is a degree of explosiveness with him. They want to get him the ball and take advantage of that. And that's what Ryan Tannehill wants to do too. So I think that works hand in hand. So that's what you got on the offense. Now, when we flip it to the other side on the defense, I have a few questions, and my biggest question, it really surrounds, it, you know, this guy, Vic Beasley, who hasn't checked in yet. I think it has a lot to do with him. But what is your question mark on the defense?
I feel like there's, with this defense, there's one large question, one obvious one, and then there's a bunch of little ones. And the large one is going to be the pass rush. And we'll get into that, because Vic Beasley definitely is a big part of that, and that's the main reason they signed him. The Titans were net only above the Dolphins in terms of, as a team, being able to rush the quarterback. That's a pretty damning weakness, considering the best teams in the NFL are able to get to the passer faster than anybody else. But the little ones to me, and one specifically that I've thought of, is replacing Logan Ryan. And part of the task is going to be given to guys like Jonathan Joseph, who are a little older, slower of step. Jonathan Joseph's not getting any faster at this point in his career. And Christian Fulton. I mean, you're going to rely on a rookie to have to cover some of the faster receivers on other teams. Do I think he can? Yeah, absolutely, because he's shown he could. He did it in college. One example I love to go to is their game in Tuscaloosa last season when he was covering Henry Ruggs, who's already going to be one of the fastest receivers in the NFL, and kept in lockstep with him the entire way. His technique is that good, and he's able to hang with guys that are just naturally faster than him. But whether he's going to be able to do that to the at the NFL level, where every week is going to be playing someone that's like Henry Ruggs. LSU plays in the SEC. They play a tough schedule, but you're maybe only facing off against three or four receivers in the entire year that are of that speed and that caliber, where in the NFL you're going to be doing this every week. So being able to translate Christian Fulton's skill set into helping replace someone like Logan Ryan, who is, according to the NFL players, one of the top 100 players in the NFL, and they have lost him this year. It's a hard thing to replace, especially with his veteran leadership and with just the natural skill that he had at that position. That's one of the little questions that I've been able to, that's kind of come into my mind when thinking about this defense, along with the big glaring one of the pass rush and how they're going to address that, especially if Vic Beasley's not in the building.
Yeah, I 100% agree that is something that you know, is a question mark. And Logan Ryan did a really good job as that nickel guy. I think, and I was on another show recently, and they asked me about the nickel position, and I made the analogy to Baskin Robbins, right? Like, you go to Baskin Robbins, and what are they known for? 31 flavors. Well, I think the number 31, KB.
Incredibly Kevin ironic. Byard. Yeah.
But no, I think when you look at that nickel spot, they have an assortment of players that can match up to what defenses do. I've said it time and time again. You want to match up to tight ends. I mean, you could use Vaccaro if you want. You could use Kevin Byard if you want. I think their best option matching up with tight ends is Amani Hooker. And I'll continue to say it. Don't sleep on Dan Cruikshank and his ability to do that. And then if you want to go against speed guys to keep those big plays from happening, Fulton is an option. I think Adoree Jackson is your best option. So there are multiple things. You want to go against physical receivers, okay, you could put Jonathan Joseph in there. You could put Malcolm Butler in there and just let them body up receivers, you know, that try to run that power forward. That's what I call it, the power forward, the power slot position. So when a team like the Bucks, for example, they put Mike Evans in the slot, now you could have a body against them. I think that's a mismatch that favors the Bucks, just to keep 100, but to give you an example. And big plays, that's something that the secondary wants to limit. And I thought it was pretty cool that Kevin Byard, when asked about the defense and you know how they could take it to the next level, I thought it was good that he touched on that. Here's what Byard had to say.
Trying to be the best secondary in the NFL in 2020. Not really concerned about, you know, stats that we put up last year, anything like that. This is a whole new group. We have to set lofty goals for ourselves, but trying to be the best that we can be and helping our defense out, not giving up big plays. And I think that's going to be our biggest thing, trying to eliminate all X plays, big plays, because I think, you know, if you do a study on our defense, if you don't give up any big plays, you don't give up any big, you know, penalties as far as like pass interference and stuff like that, most teams can't draw the ball on us or really anybody. So I think that's going to be a big thing for us, really not giving up no big plays, keeping everything in front of us, being great tacklers, being physical. And I think, you know, that will help us, you know, take our defense to that next level.
And that's something that they had an issue with at the beginning of last year. But then they kind of got it together and it didn't happen as much. So that's a good thing. And with the carryover and in their hopes as far as having Fulton and Adoree Jackson, because, you know, Adoree had a pretty decent game against the Chiefs. He did get beat. You know, it's going to happen, especially when you're going against, you know, the guy calls himself the cheetah, right? Tyreek Hill. You know, you're going to get beat. But there were a few times where he did an excellent job of turning and running with him, and that's not easy. So I think that's a good thing. One of the other aspects of the defense that could help that is the pass rush. And that's why the pass rush is the biggest thing for me, because – like when I look at this team, especially look at the Chiefs game in the AFC Championship, really the thing that kept them from getting to the Super Bowl, in my opinion, was not being able to get after Patrick Mahomes. And if you look at adding Vic Beasley, one of the things I talked to Mike Vrabel about before the Falcons game was a tiered pass rush. And the Falcons did that really well. That's why I asked them about it. Because you would have, and before the Ravens game, I said that the way that they need to attack the Ravens is like on National Geographic, when you have lions hunting a gazelle. And that's the way that they need to do this now. And it's the way that the Falcons use their pass rush, a tiered pass rush, where you had Vic Beasley on one side, Tack McKinley on the other, and you had Grady Jarrett in the middle. And Vic Beasley or the outside guys, Beasley or McKinley, they did a really good job of not getting too deep when they're coming off the edge to rush the passer, right? And it was tiered. So if they noticed, and I'm not sure exactly, I want to ask Beasley this, because it was like it was in sync, right? They would know who was deep and who was kind of like middle, so to speak. And you would see, like, the guy that was deep, he wouldn't get deeper than 8 yards. You know what I mean? So he's not completely out of the picture, but he's there enough to flush the quarterback up, right? But then the guy on the opposite side is there enough to keep the quarterback from having that escape route to the opposite side while you have Grady Jarrett collapse in the middle. Harold Landry is also very capable of that. I like the tandem of Landry and Beasley with Jeffrey Simmons wrecking shop from the middle. I think that's a nice group, and they could tier their pass rush. And for Landry, you know, he's someone that if you look at it, like, he's known for the fastball. The guy could bend, like, his ankle flexion is stupid. And I mean, like, the guy could bend. And I told him this the first time I talked to him. I said, you are like Gumby. Whereas, like, you could bend your body, contort your body, and, like, run sideways and still have speed to it. And I wanted to know the key to being able to do that. So we got into that a little bit. But that's his bread and butter. But offensive linemen are going to know that, right? And I think when you could get an offensive lineman to rush back into his set, and then you come off with the speed and you hit that outside step, club, and swim inside, or you hit the outside step and spin back inside, now you're doing something, right? Mm-hmm. So now you have the guy, like, he's just like, yo, I don't know what the heck he's going to do. And I think that's something that Beasley and Harold Landry, because they both are really good outside pass rushers, and they get off the ball extremely well. But Landry specifically, he needs to work on that counter. Mm-hmm. And he was asked about just developing pass rush moves and how he could become a better pass rusher. And I'm harping on this because, yes, Vic Beasley is very important, but I think Harold Landry is their best pass rusher. And I think if he could get to the next level, he could really help that defense, help limit those deep passing plays, and just get them in bad situations that can lead to turnovers and just lead to really good field position. So this is Harold Landry when he was asked about developing other moves.
Necessarily looking to have, like, you know, 1,000 moves in my repertoire. You know, I'm just looking to have 2 or 3. And being able to make those the best reps possible. You know, and another thing is, you know, being versatile, being able to, you know, rush, not just on the edge, but, you know, wherever they want me to rush from, depending on the call. So that's what I feel like I need to do to take that next step.
So that's exactly what he needs to do. And I think it was really good, because he got into it a little bit, like asking, he was asked also, like, what guys he should watch and how he should go about developing some of those moves. So we're just going to keep it going with another quote that he had. So listen to this. I thought this was really interesting.
When you're talking about different moves, you can watch different guys. Like, if you're trying to perfect a spin, you can watch Dwight Freeney. If you're trying to, you know, protect, like, if you're trying to, like, perfect a ghost move, touch and go, you can look at Vaughn. You're trying to look at a cross chop, you can look at Yannick. I mean, you can, like, the list goes on. Depending on what moves you're trying to work on, there's a whole bunch of guys in this league that they've picked certain moves and they've kind of mastered them. And, you know, I feel like that's what you want. You need to have, like, I feel like to maintain a level of consistency in this league, to produce wins in pass rushing, you just got to pick a couple moves and just, like, make them, like, your best moves and just be able to hit them with stride, no thinking about it, every rep. And I think you'll have success.
That's 100% right. So for me, it's all about the pass rush. I think when you lose one of your best players on defense who specialized in hunting quarterbacks, there's a lot of questions. Now, how can they answer that question? There's a certain guy by the name of Jadeveon Clowney who's out there. I think that's the best way that they can answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
Go out and get him.
Yeah. Oh, the stat I alluded to earlier of pass rush win rate, in terms of, you know, how fast you can get to the quarterback. Jadeveon Clowney's a top 5 guy in this past season. While he may not have the sacks on paper, he is someone that disrupts quarterbacks. And like you mentioned earlier, it's harder to be able to beat teams over the top, teams like the Chiefs, who rely on beating you over the top and making big plays. Hard to set those up when you have less than 3 seconds to throw the ball every time you snap it. And Jadeveon Clowney is one of the best in the entire league at doing that when he is healthy, and he's still out there. I mean, we don't know, obviously, that situation just yet, but if the Titans were to land him, that obviously answers their biggest question mark, and that fills the void that they probably needed the most on this defense to be able to compete with the one team that took you out.
Without a doubt. So those are our questions on offense and defense. Wanted to take a little dive into that. I know I went on a tangent in regards to Harold Landry, but, you know, when you look at him, he is a guy that can absolutely help this defense, or not even help, make this defense get to the next level. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be back with more talk about this Titans team. I mean, we discussed Harold Landry. I mentioned Vic Beasley a few times. So I think we need to dive into the prized free agent edition. We'll be right back.
This is Jayon Brown, and you're now talking with TD.
All right, back from the break. You hear it, OTS Solo. That's his track, Sipping on Bread. If you like that, make sure you check him out on YouTube, OTS Solo. But he says Sipping on Red. Well, a guy who used to wear red now, well, eventually is going to wear blue, the two-tone blue, as you guys like to call it, is Vic Beasley. And we're going to get into that. Before we do, Jayon Brown took us in after the break. He was activated off of PUP, so a lot of the concerns that people had, like I posted that last week on Twitter and social media, etc. And man, fans were like, "Oh, what the heck, man!" Hey, he's back, so that's a good thing. He and Rashawn Evans, you know, will be locking things down in the middle of that defense. So I wanted to touch on that. But I think something that a lot of fans are reacting to and questioning, and rightfully so, is Vic Beasley. All right, so here's the deal. 1 year, $9.5 million deal. $6 million of that was signing bonus. So that has been paid to Vic Beasley already. $6 million. Here you go, my man.
Off the bat.
That's exactly. So the Titans, they trusted this guy to get off on the good foot, as my man James Brown would say. There was a lot of questioning, and there were a lot of things that came out of Atlanta about his work ethic. Dan Quinn, the head coach, personally worked with him. They picked up his fifth-year option, right? And you know, Dan Quinn said, "Hey, look, I'm going to work." Now, Dan Quinn is a guy who has worked with a lot of really good pass rushers, including one who got the money that Vic Beasley was supposed to get from the Falcons, right? Dante Fowler. They went and signed Dante Fowler. He just happened to work with Fowler when they were at Florida. But he said, "I'm going to make you my personal project, and I'm going to work with you." Initially, things didn't go right. As things got a little bit more towards the end of the year, the last six games, I mean, Beasley really turned it up. And I personally, when I looked at that, I said, okay, you know what? This is something that a team could look at and say, okay, he finished motivated. Let's get him in here motivated and see what we could do. Because he has that sticker. Like my guy Jordan Reed from the Draft Network, I remember talking to him about first-round picks. And he said, you know, a first-round pick, you get that sticker placed on you, and there's always a team that says, hey, I could get that talent. Deion Jordan, years ago, was the number two overall pick. The 49ers just signed him recently. So that's proof of it. So when you look at Vic Beasley, he has a first-round sticker. The Titans said, you know, I know the news that has come out about him from Atlanta. I think we can make it work. And Coach Vrabel said that they're giving him a fully clean slate. Because I remember actually sitting right here asking him about that when he first spoke to us. And, you know, they weren't concerned with whatever they heard from Atlanta or, you know, whatever came out of there. They wanted to give him a clean slate. Knowing that. I mean,
where do you start at this point now?
Yeah,
you
know? Knowing that this organization is offering you a clean slate, knowing that you have the opportunity to show that things are different. Now, look, man, I get it. I don't know what in particular this man is going through or what's keeping him, so I'm not going to chastise him too much. But end of the day, you're a professional. Mm-hmm. And you have to show up.
That's the bare minimum, at least.
If you're not going to show up, at least call.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting what Mike Vrabel had to say when he was, well, he wasn't even asked. You didn't even have to ask him about Vic Beasley. He opened it up. Do you know what I mean? Like, he opened his press conference up about Vic Beasley. Here's what he had to say.
Hey, guys. You know, I know there's probably a lot of questions and concerns, you know, about Vic Beasley. I just want to address you know, where we are with that. And me personally, you know, we're excited to see Vic when he gets here. Again, have not, he's not here. Everybody else is, and he's under contract. We expect him to be here. But again, have not, have reached out, have not had, you know, much conversation with him. And, you know, we still look forward to getting him in here and coaching him when he gets here. I want to coach him and want him to be a part of the football team. So, you know, that's where I'm at. I know that there's going to be, obviously questions. I'm hopeful that we can focus and I can focus on our football team and the guys that are here that are improving, that are trying to improve, and the ones that we're coaching. So.
All right. Make sense of this for me, Elijah.
Ooh. You know when you're in trouble via email and the email starts off with per my last email, and you know that whoever is sending this, while being polite, isn't very happy with you. That is coded language for a bunch of expletives that are probably directed at you. That is how I took that entire opening statement. Because he's, oh, there's guys here. Everyone else is here. Vic Beasley is not here. We expect him to be here, but he's still not here. And when he's opening it up, the entire press conference with that statement, that's not only him, you know, probably expressing some frustration if he's willingly giving that out, but he's also trying to tell everybody else, all of us Titans media, that please limit asking about this guy because it's getting old and now it's becoming a distraction. That is the one thing, the Patriot way that Mike Vrabel has been indoctrinated with when he was a player in the NFL, has kind of always avoided. Avoid all distractions. And now it's gotten to the point where a week after the Titans said, or John Robinson said, that he expects Vic Beasley to report shortly, I don't think a week falls in that shortly range. So that entire opening monologue from Coach Vrabel at today's press conference reeks of per my last email, almost passive-aggressive intensity towards Vic Beasley. He's not happy, and I'm sure a lot of the guys in the locker room kind of mirror that sentiment as well in one way or another.
No doubt about it, guys are pissed off. You know, and you think about it, it's he's getting into a new group, right? And one of the things when you get into a new group is you make that first impression. Well, these guys are professionals, and they understand that, you know, everybody has different things that come up. But one of the keys here in all of this, John Robinson said it's unexcused.
Yeah.
Right? That's something.
And but didn't then, elaborate either. It's unexcused. He didn't even elaborate on what was told to him.
He didn't have to elaborate. He said unexcused. That tells you all you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it's, with that coming from this organization that really, in my 2+ years here, seemed to really have the players' interests at heart, that says a lot. Mm-hmm. So that's statement number one. As a teammate, if I see that, I'm like, okay, it's unexcused. Man, if J-Rob didn't excuse it, then you know what? I really wonder what's going on. That's how I would look at it if I was a teammate. Right? And then for Vrabel to come out and say, well, I haven't had any personal these guys are close to Mike Vrabel. The players are. And it's something that happens quickly. I get it. They didn't get to be in person, right? Vrabel and Beasley didn't get to be in person and meet in person. But I don't know, man. Knowing that I'm in a new group, I'm going to do everything I can to make this new group, A, have a solid first impression, mm-hmm. and B, players talk. I guarantee you there are people on on Atlanta's team that know people on the Titans. And I guarantee you there are conversations. I would be shocked if those guys who know each other didn't say, hey, look, man, what's up with your boy? You know what I mean? What can I expect? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And they tell him. So it's just for me, like, I would try to do everything I can to diffuse what, especially if it's not true. If it's not true, what's coming out about his work ethic and laziness, I'd be like, yo, this is a new group I'm with, a new organization. I want to get in there, get acclimated, meet all of my teammates. I want to get off on the right side of things and be able to make those guys understand, look, I'm in it to win it. One year, 9.5, I'm going to make the best of this opportunity. But instead, we have a guy who, like Mike Vrabel said, he said, I personally haven't talked to him. What?
And that's the head coach. That's probably the most important person to talk to.
How could you not have texted the head, hey, coach, boom, boom. And I get it, like, you know, sometimes when you're dead wrong, you don't want to face what's in front. But at the same time, man, like, at some point, see, continuing to stretch this thing out is only making it worse.
It's making a distraction. That's just the worst thing, too.
It's not just a distraction. I mean, it's just making it worse. You need this time to get in and get acclimated. What is the thing that Kenny Vaccaro said was the biggest difference from 2018 to last year?
He had a full training camp.
A full training camp and a full opportunity to go out there and sweat with these guys and bleed with these. That is not fully here now, but at one point he's going to report. But then after that, you got to have three, like, just to get into the building, you got to have 4 days. You have to wait 4 days. So time is being lost. You're only going to have limited practices. It is, you know, August 5th, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say he reports on August 5th. August 9th is going to be your first chance to be in the building. You are losing time. And I think it just, for a guy who was brought in to team with Harold Landry, you know, he was brought in to be the answer, not part of the answer, a part of the solution for the desired pass rush. I can't for the life of me understand. I hope the man is okay. You know what I'm saying? I hope he's all right. You know, whether it be physically or mentally, I hope he's cool. But it just, I can't, with the absence being said to be unexcused, I just can't grasp or wrap my mind around why he's not in the facility.
Yeah, and like the NFL is almost kind of like high school because everybody talks. Like if you're going to have a class, like your classmates know everything about each other, even from things that they've heard about each other. In the NFL, it's kind of that interfraternity of players as well. And I like how you alluded to that. Like even if I am accused of being lazy, the last thing I want to do is display traits of what is perceived laziness. You know, that'd be a very bold way to try to quell any of those rumors or that reputation of myself. And that's what really, really makes it puzzling. Because you know Vic Beasley's heard this stuff. Like, this isn't anything new to him that he's got this moniker attached to him, whether it be fair or not.
Yeah.
That's the reason he's not in Atlanta. And yep. That's got to be – he's got to know that. You know, and that's what it's a head-scratcher because obviously it's nothing COVID-related or else, like, John Robinson would have elaborated on it and it would have been excused. This is the number one time in the history of the NFL where you have the biggest excuse not to show up to training camp. I mean, this is the golden opportunity for a year to not show up to training camp. And it's still unexcused. So I'm with you. It's puzzling and it sends a bad message to the players as much as it does to, like, Coach Vrabel, especially if he hasn't talked to him personally.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even one of his original players. It's not like he knows Vic Beasley
right
that well on a personal level that we know of. But now he's not going to have that time to at least be able to establish that foundation with the guy that's going to be running the defense for this year.
It's baffling to me. And you mentioned running the defense. Obviously, Shane Bowen is going to have a lot to do with that. I asked him a little bit because here's the thing, man. Like, let's say, you know, when Calvin was leaving and you were coming in, let's say Ryan Porth, the program director, sat you down and said, hey, listen, I'm going to be honest with you. Teron is a guy that, you know, has a temper, or he's a guy that if it's not right, he's going to be really mad about it. You would go into our first time working together saying, okay, you know what? This is something I'm going to think about. Let me just figure out, you know, the best way to navigate this situation.
Yeah.
Right? So Shane Bowen, in this case, you know, has heard things. And again, these are things that he heard, nothing that he experienced. So I respect him for saying it's not fair because he hasn't even met him yet. But at the same time, it's something you have to think about as you're going in. And I think he worked to try to get things right with Beasley as far as getting him involved. Let's play the quote. I mean, I asked him about this, and this is what he had to say about, you know, just Vic Beasley and some of the things that they've done to try to get him comfortable and up to speed.
Honestly, I haven't ever even met Vic. I think it's unfair for me to even have any assumptions about anything, whether he works hard, whether he doesn't work hard. Like, once we get him here, whenever that is, we'll kind of see. And the one thing I will say, I think our culture as a team and as a defensive unit, like, if you ain't a hard worker, it's probably not going to work out too well, you know. And I think a lot of guys conform, and no matter whether they are or they aren't, like, they're going to fit into our culture, and it's kind of the expectation level here. I'm going to go about the same way I go about coaching all these other guys. Like, there's going to be high expectations. So whether you make it or not make it, if you're not a hard worker, you're probably not going to reach my expectation level. So that's just the nature of the beast. But the one thing I will say, I think just our culture in general, new guys, whoever they are, whether it's Vic or anybody else, I think we got a good culture established here from John Robinson, Coach Vrabel, from the top down, in terms of what we're looking for and what we want from this team.
So that's why Shane Bowen believes that things will work. He's leaning on the culture. And a part of that culture is welcoming a new player. And there's actually a different quote. I didn't get to pull that one, but there's a different quote where he says that they had extensive one-on-one meetings with Beasley. They met more with him one-on-one than they met with him in the group setting. Now, he was a part, you know, he was on those group meetings, but they went above and beyond that. Again, they went above and beyond that. I'll say it one more time. They went above and beyond that to have specific one-on-one meetings to get him up to speed. What does that tell you? They are making a concerted effort to make this situation as comfortable as possible for him and have him ready to hit the ground running. Their reward for that is, 9 days into training camp and he's not there. So when you see Mike Vrabel have such a stern look on his face, when you see the tone of his voice have disgust to it, there's reason. Because it's like, yo, I put my neck out there. Like, I put the branch out for you, and you're basically taking a lighter to it and burning the branch. You're basically karate chopping my neck that's put out there for you. Listen, I'm glad I'm not a fan, because just, you know, as somebody just being there and seeing this, it frustrates me. I can't imagine how upset fans are, and I doubly can't imagine how fellow players and coaching staffs and personnel folks, how upset they are about this.
And it's not like he's a cheap investment. Like you said, $6.3 million to give his John Hancock and put it on a piece of paper, and then the extra $3 million, you know, for playing the season. But that's not cheap. I mean, this guy is an investment that this team made emotionally and financially to get him on the field. I can't really, we can talk all day about, like, why isn't he showing up? But I mean, I just blows my mind. If I get $6 million to sign a piece of paper, you can get me to do anything, Teron. I'll be the tackling dummy. I mean, yeah. I'll go maskless and be a tackling dummy for training camp, for that kind of signing bonus. They're going to have that much faith in me to at least show up, you know?
I mean, it's all relative.
Yeah.
You know, $6 million to us is different than $6 million to them. Yeah. But at the same time, I get what you're saying. It's just like, yo, for me, it's an organization investing in me, not just money, but investing their time in me, investing their trust in me, investing their, you know, success in me.
And it's a prove it deal. Like, they're giving you the opportunity to prove it for the entire league. That's what these 1 year deals are.
Yeah.
These are tryouts, not just, you know, to find your place on this team, which maybe you can cash in on and have a future with, but for any other team, the market's only going to get bigger after this season. So if you show yourself to be a reliable teammate, a very productive pass rusher, which, if you haven't noticed, is a valuable, lucrative position in the National Football League, it's an opportunity for him as much as it is for the Titans. They both kind of needed each other in this situation, and it's a little insulting when one side kind of denies their responsibility or ignores the responsibility of that relationship.
Yeah, and again, I'll wrap it up with, once again, I hope that he's in a good place physically, mentally, spiritually, everything. He's in a good place financially. Like, there's no getting around that. But, this is a situation that is going to be ongoing. We'll continue to discuss it and touch on it. But, it's not something that they need to be concerned about right now. And unfortunately, it's an issue that's placed in front of them. And I think even once he does report, you're always going to have that, okay, can I really count on him? And I think that's something that the coaching staff, the player, everyone's going to have to be concerned about that. Can we really count on him? Because, in a time when we had all of this time to be away from the facility, at a time when it's most important to be here not only on time, but actually early, it's not happening. Hope the dude is okay. But we're going to go ahead and go to a break. Before we do, make sure you subscribe, right? Search us out. iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Check out Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review, and really appreciate it. We'll be right back.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
Let it play a little bit. Yeah. All right, back from the break. OTS Solo bringing you back once again. One thing that I didn't mention when we were talking about Vic Beasley that I wanted to bring up is this has a lot of bearing on the Falcons too, because there's a fifth-round pick at stake, right? A comp pick. So I'm sure Falcons fans, you guys are like, hey, listen.
about this guy.
Yeah.
It's not what it seems. We swear. It's not that bad.
Yeah, so there's a lot at stake, but one of the other positions where there's a lot at stake, and we talked offense and defense, but a lot that has to do with that is the punt return duty, and that's something I thought it was rather intriguing. What Craig Aukerman said when he was asked about the punt return position, he brought up a name that I think made a lot of Titans fans say, "What, bro? Do that Scooby Doo?
Bro, Reggie?
Yeah." Let's check it out. Let's see what Craig Aukerman and special teams, what Coach Auk had to say.
You know, obviously the punt returner is going to be a big thing for us. We had a lot of guys back there, starting with Adoree, Khalif, Rashard Davis was back there. Obviously, Adam Humphreys, those guys are all going to be competing for that job. So we're excited to get those guys out there and get ready to roll. We feel good about those guys, especially how dynamic they can be. We got to continue to do a good job, including myself, of giving those guys confidence to go back there, catch the punt, make a guy miss, and then end up getting upfield for us.
So, Adoree Jackson. I thought that was interesting that he mentioned him. A lot of Titans fans, when I posted that Adoree Jackson was mentioned as being in the mix, a lot of people had interesting reactions. But yeah, what are your thoughts there? Do you think Adoree should be one of the guys that they're looking at?
I think at this point, because they had about five, like you said, five different punt returners last year. it was a revolving door. It was a carousel. I think one thing, if you're a Titans fan, that you'd like to see is one guy, is having one guy you can rely upon to make the most out of a lot of these punt returns. The Adoree Jackson thing to me is interesting because they've already had some trial and error with him, and I feel like once he stopped returning punts normally, his play as a corner got a little better. I think that sentiment might ring true with others as well, but I don't know. I mean, Adoree Jackson's a world-class athlete. I mean, there's really nothing he can't do athletically. So that's interesting. If I'm a Titans fan, I really don't know how I feel about that. I feel like the most important thing would be to have the one reliable punt returner instead of kind of going through a slew of different guys, if you will. But, I mean, if Adoree Jackson's in the conversation, you at least feel good about what he can do athletically.
And that's the thing. You go back to what he did at USC, and it was so dynamic and so exciting.
Boosts his draft stock, I would say.
Yeah, most definitely. And I understand that. I think, you know, things happen. And for me, just in watching him after that, and even talking to him a bit after that Jaguars game, and I just feel like that 2018 game where he was fielding a punt and the tight end James O'Shaughnessy, you know, just really he blasted him. And I just don't think he's been – now, this is just my own – he's never said it, but just from my own interaction, talking to him about punts and talking to him about, you know, just that job and then watching him, seeing there was a different degree of hesitation in the punt return game. And I think the Jacksonville Jaguars game last year in Jacksonville, you know, kind of showed that where there was the issue. I think it's something – got to let him move on. This man is capable of being a very, very good cornerback. Let him focus on that, especially now that you're likely going to see added roles for him on the defense as far as playing nickel. Probably going to travel with more of these receivers, and I think he should focus on that. And that will open the door for some of the other guys, right? He mentioned, yeah. Coach Auk mentioned Khalif Raymond, who we know is someone that he brings a lot to the table. He could be a returner. And then Adam Humphries, right? Old Faithful. You know that when he fields a punt, it's going to be fielded. That is not going to be bobbled. But one of the other guys that I wanted to mention that, you know, he actually got one of the awards from Coach Vrabel, the offseason awards for his work ethic, and they seem to bring him up a lot. And I know it's you know, a shot in the dark that he makes a roster, although I have him on my 53, is Rashard Davis. And the thing is, we're talking about a guy who was an outstanding punt returner. And I know it's just JMU, right? But he was
– and they won a lot of football games at JMU. Those are always really good football teams.
Yeah, and he was an outstanding returner. I believe it was the record. He tied a record for the most punt returns for touchdowns or something along those lines. I'm going to just double-check it real quick.
I think you might be right on that, too. I think I have heard the same thing. But, I mean, yeah, FCS football is different than FBS football. But when you dominate kind of like the way he did at a school that – outside North Dakota State, it probably has one of the richest histories in the last decade, and that it's pretty meaningful.
Yeah, and that having that experience with it, you know, that gives you that comfort level, you know, to be able to field the punts like Adam Humphries does. And I asked him, actually, we had him on talking with TD last month, and we got to talk to him a little bit about the return game. I thought it was pretty cool, a couple of the quotes that he has. So check it out.
You know, I definitely try to work on it as much as possible. But when I go back there and catch the punts, I just try to stay as calm as I can. You know, just relying on my teammates and trusting that, you know, they're going to make the key blocks. So I don't have to be back there panicking, yeah. Trying to, you know, catch the ball at the same time. And this punt return for me, I feel like it's easier than kick return just because, like, I feel like on punt return, you have, you know, the first wave, which is the gunners, and then you have this next wave, And I feel like I can see the field more because it's not like, unlike kick return where on kickoff, everybody's basically coming in one wave. And it's kind of, you know, harder when you're running full speed to find those holes. On punt return, I make one, two dudes miss. And I feel like the field is, you know, wide open at that point.
Yeah, and I looked it up. So it was four punt returns for touchdowns, which is an FCS record. So, yeah, I mean, he brings a lot to the table from that perspective. He went into it a little bit more, so I just want to piggyback off of what he said. And this is when I asked him about comfortably fielding punts. And there's different things that I've talked to guys as far as, you know, how they field punts and how they scan the field and make sure everything is okay and be able to, you know that they got a shot at really legitimately returning a punt. So check this one out.
Man, for me, honestly, like, I try to do it a little different. I, like, soon as the ball is kicked, I see the first trajectory of the ball, and then I'll look down and see if the gunner's got off clean or not.
Gotcha.
And if they didn't get off clean, you know what I'm saying, then I feel like more than likely if I get a good punt, if it's not, you know, super high or short, I'm going to catch it and try to make some moves with it. Because, you know, the front line, you're definitely going to get held up a little bit. So that's just enough time, you know what I'm saying, that's enough time for me to get the ball and see the coverage at that point. But if the gunners, you know, get off free, then I'll have to take, you know, maybe a double take or a triple take before I, you know, make my decision to, you know, return the ball. So I feel like, you know, with that approach, it's a little easier because you're able to make your mind up a little faster.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, trying to look up, look down, look up, look down. Especially you got a windy day, that ball gets swirling in the air on you. It can be difficult.
So that's why he is so comfortable. You see how he just laid it out. Okay, this is how I go about fielding the punt and knowing what's in front of me. I thought that was pretty good how he explained that.
Teron, you've been covering football for a while now. Have you ever heard a player speak about punt returns? And not just like returning the punt and like surveying the field, but surveying the field while the ball is in the air with such technicality and nuance in what you heard right there.
No, actually.
There's no way.
Yeah.
I mean, that is such a technical approach to returning punts. And we watch it on TV as if, oh, punts in the air, high hang time, just fair catch or not. Or like for me, I mean, I would assume that, you know, you're doing the up-down approach because you're surveying the field, go with looking up, looking down, looking up, and just trying to make catch first and then make decisions after you make catch.
Right.
Whereas Rashard Davis has his whole route almost, it seems like, in mind on where you know, defenders are going to be based off where how the gunners got off the line. And that is like one of the most insightful answers to a special teams question that I think you'll ever hear from any player. And when you're in a situation like the Titans are, and you have had a rotating door of punt returners, of guys who also play really important other positions, you might want the guy who is thinking of this as an artwork, not as a secondary position.
And that's the thing. You have to look at it as an art, and you have to look at it as, hey, this is his key to making a roster, right? Oh, yeah. He could really firmly plant the number 12 in the ground by emerging as their top punt returner. Coach Aukerman mentioned it. It's an area that they want to improve. I mean, when was the last time a Titans player returned a punt for a touchdown?
I think the only one they ever had that was like an all pro or pro bowler would have been Derek Mason.
So it's been a long time.
That's
a
while ago.
Yeah. It's been a long time. Pac-Man, did he ever get
Pac-Man? I don't know if he ever got
a touchdown.
He might've gotten, I know he had a touchdown or two. I don't know if he ever went all pro. I need to look at that, but I know D-Mace was all pro at receiver and kick and punt returning.
So, the thing, I'm not even talking about all pro. I mean, when was the last time a Titans player, period, you know, returned a punt for a touchdown?
That's a good question right there.
So, that's what they need to have. They need that explosiveness. They need that field position. I remember back when I covered the 49ers, and one of the things that always helped that offense was Ted Ginn. Mm-hmm. He would field that punt. Now, granted, I think it was against Seattle one time. He returned one for a touchdown. But you always saw that guy get them good field position. And that was why one of the reasons why that offense was so effective, right? Imagine, you know, you look at what Brett Kern does, right, how he pins teams back and how he flips the field. Imagine mm-hmm. having someone that could flip the field, you know, for your offense. And that's something that's really crucial. And that is a way that this team could help get to the next level and be that team that could get to the Super Bowl. So the punt return duty is definitely important.
And in a weird way, too, and I just kind of thought of this, if you're able to flip the field like that and your average starting field position could be within your own 45 or, you know, the 50 or even the opponent's 45, you're going to make Derrick Henry a lot more valuable because you're not having to drive the ball the entire length of the field. You can preserve carries. You can preserve mileage on Derrick Henry. So in a way, you're not just helping out your offense by simply getting great field position. You always want great field position, but you're going to help out the mileage that you're putting on Derrick Henry when you're playing the long game, when you're planning an offense over a course of a 16-week regular season plus playoffs. That eventually kind of adds on to itself if you're able to at least preserve, as no matter like the more, most you can get in terms of preserving Derrick Henry to be his best later on in the season, and just makes a lot easier on your offense, especially when they were that good in the red zone this past year. I mean, what better way to get you closer to the red zone than to not have to start out on your own 25 or 30 every possession?
It's another weapon to have. So it's good that they're looking at that, trying to find ways to get better there. And we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to seeing how they are. I know they're going to start getting into some more live periods. Obviously, the returner won't be getting hit, but they're going to do some different things. Coach Aukerman had mentioned some ways that they're going to go about being able to get guys in those pressure situations. So we'll see what happens. I'll make sure whatever I can provide digitally, you know, video wise, we'll get that out there. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back to wrap this thing up.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
That's my daughter, man. That's my oldest.
What?
Yes, sir.
What?
My 21-year-old, Deja Davenport, putting in that work, singing the hooks there. She's been singing for a while, man, since she was little. And she had to sing to get into Howard University, get into their school of music. So wanted to make sure that I you know, gave my baby girl a shout out, man. That's my heart. So
you get to have a proud daddy plug here.
That's right, man.
Late in the show. That's really
right,
cool.
Man.
Yeah.
Proud dad moment for sure, man. I'm so proud of everything that she's doing. Like she's something else, man.
It's wild, yeah. Because you send me this music ahead of time, and I like to go listen to it because I like to get a little bit more hip hop education. I'm a big '90s hip hop guy, and you've honestly introduced me to a lot of stuff that I've never gotten to come across. So I'll go through and listen to a lot of this beforehand, and I heard this, and I saw where you wanted me to drop the needle at, and I remember thinking, oh, this is really good. Like, this is a really good hook, a well-produced hook, a well-sung hook to this song. Had zero idea that was your daughter until this very second.
Yeah, that's my baby girl, man.
That's awesome.
Shout out, Deja. And it's now time to wrap this thing up. In this last segment, I wanted to just kind of take a lighthearted approach. I thought it was pretty funny, you know, talking to Kevin Byard, Jonnu Smith, Taylor Lewan. They all touched on Dennis Kelly. And we mentioned Dennis Kelly earlier being, you know, a guy who's going to be starting at right tackle. But, you know, he is an enforcer in the locker room as well. He's the guy. He's their player rep. He was an assistant. It used to be Wesley Woodyard was the NFLPA rep. He still has a role with the NFLPA, although he's not with the Titans. So Dennis Kelly inherited that position, and he's making sure that everybody's on point with their mask and, you know, with following protocols. It's funny, Kevin Byers said he's kind of anal about it, but he said he appreciates it and it's necessary, man. Because he said the team that's going to be playing in January is going to be the team that's the safest, mm-hmm. and the team that is most healthy. So That's a good thing. John Smith kind of joked when I asked him about it. He said, you know, Dennis is doing his thing and he's making sure that we're following protocol. The funniest, though, for me was Taylor Lewan. And he always, Taylor is, it's, you don't really usually get offensive linemen who command as much attention as he does. So it's funny, and it's always a cool thing when you get to talk to him. Here's what he had to say when asked about Dennis Kelly.
I think Dennis would be an unbelievable dictator in any country, as the way he's been handling the mask thing. And so, although it's been very annoying, he's doing a good job. And I hate even saying that out loud. Dennis is a really good friend of mine, so I hate throwing the boy compliments. But Dennis and I actually got into it today about me and my mask was below my nose. So he made sure and told me the protocols of what to do. And so he's been doing a good job. He's definitely is not worried about being annoying from that sense, which is good.
So imagine a fly on the wall during that conversation, man. That would be hilarious.
One large grown man that is paid to move other large grown men, getting on to that grown man who is paid more than anybody else on the planet to move other large grown men about a mask. And that is something, especially with his personality too. And interesting wording choice. I don't think it's ever been a compliment for somebody to be said that they could be a great dictator one day. So I don't know what Dennis Kelly has planned in his future after football, but maybe fascism might be something he could easily squeeze his foot into. That's a very interesting way to put it.
I think being as though, you know, he could pass for the Undertaker, he might have some wrestling in his future.
The
after
Dictator
his
could be his
day.
Name. Yeah, the Dictator. We already set him up for a post-football wrestling career because Taylor Lewan just gave him his name.
It's all there. So that's the show. We wanted to take a deep dive into some things, so that's why we didn't have any guests. But we'll be back with another guest next week. Appreciate each of you tuning in. And as always, thank you, God bless, and good night.